We've already done this. Compromise of 1850, and you can refer back to your notes from 2 weeks ago for that. So now we start with the 1850s, the process. We've done this two or three times. The first time we did this was after the French and Indian War, and we went moment by moment by moment, and then here we are with the American Revolution. And so, compromise of 1850, moment, 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 and pretty soon we're going to be at secession and civil war. Uncle Tom's Cabin was a book written by Harriet Beecher Stowe. It elevated the awareness of what slavery was all about throughout the United States. And every once in a while I have a student or two who sort of misinterprets that. You mean there were people in the United States that didn't know that slavery existed? You mean there were people in the United States that didn't know that slavery could be cruel? No, that's not what we're talking about here. But I can't think of a good example now, but you can have a pretty good idea about something. I mean, you know something exists, it's out there, and you've got a pretty good idea that it's this or that, but you don't really know the details and to what extent. And that's what Uncle Tom's Cabin did for slavery. It is not a literary masterpiece. So if you ever take a course in college, the 10 greatest books in American history, in terms of literary accomplishment, Uncle Tom's Cabin's not going to be on that list. Moby Dick might be, right? At least John Garrity would put Moby Dick on the list. Perhaps the last of the Mohicans. All right. But Uncle Tom's Cabin's not going to be there. Harriet, this is important. Harriet Beecher Stowe, I'm trying to wrestle with that piece of fuzz in here. Harriet Beecher Stowe did not write Uncle Tom's Cabin as an indictment against the South. And I know that's a tough connection to make, because you're thinking, well, that doesn't make sense. I mean, slavery's associated with the South. So yeah, it's an attack on the South. Well, not directly. It was an attack on the institution of slavery. In fact, if you've read it, you know that the villain, the very cruel slave owner named Simon Legree, was a transplanted Northerner. Not a Southerner from, not born and raised in the South. Well, that was purposeful by Harriet Beecher Stowe. All right. And in terms of today's standards, it would have been a bestseller. All right. The Kansas-Nebraska Act, 1854, is hugely important. Garrity calls it, you ran into this on one of your, I think one of the questions in your worksheets, Garrity calls it the single greatest step in the 1850s toward civil war. Whoa, time for statehoods. So, yeah. Well, this isn't going to be over in 2 minutes. So, a new territory is created in anticipation of statehoods. Here. And immediately then, since there's one territory created, then the argument, slave or free. The bill was introduced by Stephen Douglas. Stephen Douglas has a hidden agenda here. What I'm going to tell you now about Stephen Douglas is not, don't go too far with this. It's not particularly complimentary of Stephen Douglas, but it doesn't make him a bad guy. End of the day, Stephen Douglas was a good guy. All right. He has an eye, let's see, Republican Party, it's gone. Republican Party expansion westward. Development. Railroads. There needs to be extensive railroad, railway in the West. There's nothing now. The question is not, is it going to occur? And not really when. I mean, it's going to be really, really soon. But the big question is, where's that first one going to go? What's going to be the route of the first one? The eastern terminal. The starting point in the east would benefit economically from that. Enormously. So is it going to be perhaps Memphis, Chicago, further north? Well, Douglas wants to pave the way for that transcontinental railway, the first one to go through the center of the United States. Oh, well, that makes sense. They go through the center. That's not what he's thinking. He happens to be on the board of the Illinois Central Railway. And so, for him, if this happens, then that could benefit him a little bit financially. This is not out and out corruption. Because it's a bill. It has to be voted on in Congress. It's all out there. And he's not hiding the point of, nobody knows that I'm on the board that manages the Central, the Illinois Central. So nothing is secretive about this. That's why I say don't take this too far. But nevertheless, that's, Stephen Douglas has this in mind. Popular sovereignty, remember, Lewis Cass of Michigan introduces popular sovereignty as the grand solution. On paper, it is the grand solution. Let the people of the new territory slash state make that decision. Popular sovereignty will determine the question of slavery there. And therefore, the Missouri Compromise line of 36 degrees, 30 minutes has to be repealed, right? Because, remember, according to the Missouri Compromise, 1820, slavery was prohibited in any state formed north of 36 degrees, 30 minutes. And that would have been here. So that's part of the bill, to repeal that. Well, it's not going to go well because of the one state situation. So then, Douglas amends his own bill to create two states, two territories slash states, Kansas and Nebraska. Nebraska's going to be free. And Kansas, well, here we go. Makes sense. Popular sovereignty. I mean, it's in that area geographically that you know of, that we would call the border states. And I know that there are, if you Google border states, or maybe even look in the index of Garrity or Brinkley, border states, there's going to be some specific states listed. I don't think that's, you have to worry about that too much. I mean, the border states, you get it, you get the concept, right? Border states. All right. And I'm going to say that there's actually about 9 border states, but I don't think Garrity or Brinkley is going to support that. Or if you Google, I don't think that's going to be supported. But in concept, there's 9 border states. Well, then it turns out to be 10, actually. But okay, sort that out later. So the Kansas-Nebraska Act, as amended, passes. Oh, okay then. Well, guess what? Here we go. Let's find out how this is going to work. And you already know the answer. It works beautifully on paper. But it's not going to work in reality. So that means then that the settlers in Kansas get to decide. Slave state or free state. And that leads to what's called Bleeding Kansas. And Kansans are divided. Those who wish Kansas to be free are known as Jayhawkers. There we go, University of Kansas, Jayhawks. That's where that comes from. It's not just a goofy bird that was created. And then the pro-slavery group, known as Bushwhackers. Oh, man. Okay. So, comes time. Oh, and then the Bleeding Kansas part is that there's Jayhawkers attacking and killing Bushwhackers. And then there's our retaliatory attacks. So, this leads to then trying to solve the question of slavery in Kansas leads to the death, lots of bloodshed, and the death of many Kansans. That's why it's a microcosm of, it's a prelude to what's coming. So, just expand on that. The Civil War represents Americans killing Americans instead of Kansans killing Kansans about the issue of slavery. Huh. All right. A pro-slavery government was established at Lecompton. Lecompton. And the vote was, oh, I'm going to have to do this by memory. I don't know if I can. I'll do my best. There were, in the territory of Kansas, 12,000 eligible voters. They're going to vote on free Kansas or slave Kansas. And when it comes time to vote, the voter turnout was excellent. Anybody catch that? I mean, nowadays, I don't know. I mean, a national presidential election is one thing. Some referendum in town is another thing. I mean, 20% or 37% or 68%. Yeah, this outstanding turnout. Over 100%. Because as it turns out, I'm doing this by memory, I'll have to confirm these figures later on. I know the over 100%. I think there were about 16,000 votes cast by those 12,000 residents of Kansas. Wow, that's pretty good voter turnout. A lot of interest there. Yeah. A lot of those votes were cast by, well, neighbors in Missouri. Slave Missouri then sent a lot of voters across the border. And, well, that's voter fraud. How did they get to do that? Oh, come on. I mean, the voting protocol there, I mean, it's not well regulated, right? At that time, imagine that. You know? And so then, thanks to border ruffians, they were called. That's one of your, what's my line? Border ruffians. And I never really liked that name. There's a couple of titles that don't make any sense to me. Border Ruffians, that sounds like a kind of a violent crew. And there, you know, a little bit of violence involved there, because, I mean, it was the whole Bleeding Kansas. But the Border Ruffians were more the voters, the illegal voters. Anyway, so pro-slavery government established. The anti-slavery Kansans, the Jayhawkers, were not oblivious to what had happened. They're not dumb. They knew that the election had been determined fraudulently. So they'll just go ahead and establish their own capital at Topeka. So President Buchanan has a territory that's on its way to statehood. I mean, the next step is statehood, right? With two capitals. One at Lecompton is fraudulent because of the voting situation. The other at Topeka was extra legal because it was established after the first capital had been determined by vote. Yeah, the vote was not done in a fair fashion, but that hadn't been determined yet. It hadn't been declared null and void, the results, by Buchanan, for example, or some arm of the national government. So two governments in Kansas, and there we go. That just adds to the chaos there. The chaos represented, we've already done this, in Congress. And we head off to one of those Supreme Court cases that I mentioned, you're going to be so influenced by Southern membership on the Supreme Court. So let's do Scott versus Sanford, also known as the Dred Scott case, and then we'll call it a day. And so we'll pick up tomorrow with Lincoln-Douglas debates, finish this, and go on then right into the Civil War. And I'll post these lectures, the audio. All right. And the goal is, when we walk out of here Thursday, to be done with Reconstruction. I don't know, it just occurred to me that I actually had on my list that I was going to mention as we head off into the second semester. The second semester will probably be very identical to this semester, with two big changes, I think, for us. Well, one for sure. The other, we don't know. Or at least Tubbs doesn't know. And that's the destiny of the Ephraimites. So, those are under consideration now to be discontinued as we head into the second semester. We're good for the next 3 weeks. But second semester, what are we going to do with those? And to this point, you might know more than me about this. But at this point, I think the jury is still out. I don't think a decision has been made about Fridays. Or if it has been made, which could be the possibility, teachers have not been informed yet. All right. So we'll see what happens. So that could be a change. And I'm having a tough time getting a feel on that, whether we're going to have them or not. And then the other big change that is a certainty for us is review sessions. But those don't start for, second semester, end of February. Okay. All right, let's see if I can get through this. Yeah, I can. Dred Scott decision, 1857. If I can keep that fuzz under control, I can get through this. Dred Scott, here's the story. Dred Scott, a slave of an army surgeon who lived in Missouri, slave state. This army surgeon will journey to some free states, Illinois and Indiana, I believe. That would make sense. Illinois and Indiana, and Dred Scott will accompany him. Upon returning, Dred Scott sues for his freedom. And the basis for his legal action is that once he set foot in free territory, legally free territory, Illinois, Indiana, he was free. And that should be the end of it. That immediately dissolved the bonds of ownership between the Army surgeon and Dred Scott. So the case is determined. It doesn't start with the Supreme Court. You know, that's not the way it happens, right? So it is determined at a lower court, a lower Missouri court, in, believe it or not, Dred Scott's favor. But that's not where it's going to end. So it gets to the Supreme Court, and with this Southerner, he was the same, that's the same Chief Justice, for those of you who watched Amistad, who was ruled in that case. All right, so first statement by the Supreme Court, we shouldn't even have to deal with this. It should not be here. Because, guess what? Blacks are not citizens. If you're not a member of the club, you don't get to use the facilities of the club. Blacks aren't citizens, so they don't get a lot of the benefits of what it's like, what life in America is. And that would include the court system, the use of the Supreme Court. So it shouldn't even be here. But since it is, we'll go ahead and make a ruling. The Supreme Court rules that the laws of Missouri and not the visited states, the laws of the state of residence, apply. And you don't like the outcome of that, but that one makes sense. I think it's tough to argue against that. But I'm not an attorney either. The Supreme Court goes on. Now, handle this. I know it's getting to the end here, but handle this. The Supreme Court goes on to support this by making some observations and then a conclusion. So sort of A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D, and therefore, okay, it's going to be one of those. Slaves are property. A good government, the good governments out there in this world, protect the rights of their citizens. Not just recognize, there's a difference, right? That's one of the things that makes, I'm getting off the topic just a little bit, one of the things that makes the United States great. And that is that the U.S. government just doesn't recognize certain rights. The United States government protects certain rights. There's a difference. All right. So, a good government, back to 1857, protects the rights of its citizens, and there's this, there's that, there's this, there's that, and there is personal property rights. So it's absurd to think that if you journey from one area to another, that you somehow forfeit your personal property? That's absurd. Okay then, simple. Then, so blacks are property. So when this slave owner journeyed from Missouri to Illinois, Indiana, there's no danger of him losing property rights. Slave as property or any other property. And since the United States is a good government, it's going to protect this. It's going to protect slave owners' rights to, in this case, when the slaves are reach free territory. That it, you don't like it. Who likes that? But it, like I said, for me anyway, I mean, I'm having a hard time figuring out the flaw in that reasoning. And then, I think Garrity points this out. So what the Supreme Court has actually done here this is what's bizarre, is it has used the Bill of Rights as an argument in favor of slavery. That's bizarre. And as you walk through it, yeah. And again, I'm not an attorney, so, you know, from the deep, dark corners of legal material, that might not be what's going on. But that's, you know, that's the appearance here. And, well, and that's what the Supreme Court did, at least in the opinion of one historian. Like I said, I think John Gary. Wow. Okay. Done. Start with Lincoln Doug's debates tomorrow. So when I see you next, we'll be into the Civil War.